us to finish this study by the end of this month. We have 4 Sundays to do so. All right, and then after that, beginning of the first of the year, we will start a study by request on the book of Revelation. All right, so we're going to look at that, and so that's where we're going. That's where our plan is. Okay, and so this morning we're going to focus on running for our life. Hebrews chapter 12, 1 through 3. Can you get somebody to read those verses for us? Good way. All right.
Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking into Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and had sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your soul.
How many of you remember the advertisements way back a while ago for ABC Live World of Sports?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Anybody remember what their motto was?
The
thrilling victory in the agony of defeat. Okay. There's a story that is told of ancient Greek mythology of a young girl who was a runner, and she was very good. And it came time for the games, and a lot of the boys that were going to run in this particular big race, they were concerned that they were going to get beaten by this girl because she was so good, she was so fast. And of course, in that time, in that culture, which really isn't too different from ours today, you know, for a boy to get beaten by a girl, that's not a good thing. Okay? And so they were really concerned that you know, they could get beaten by this girl in this race and they would lose all the face and everything else. So they were trying to figure out how they could defeat this girl in this race. And so they, you know, they started just trying to figure out what could they come up with that would give them an advantage over her. And one of the things that they observed was that this girl had a particular affection for trinkets, for shiny stones and things of that nature. So the boys devised a plan, and they each got, you know, several of these little trinkets, these little shiny stones and so forth. And they had them at the beginning of the race. So the race began, and what they did was, as they started out, you know, they took off running really fast, and the girls, you know, as she started to gain on them, somebody would drop some of the trinkets. And she would stop to pick them up because she could not resist it. But she was fast enough that, you know, she'd pick him up and then take off running again, and she would start catching up with him again. That's how fast she was. And so as she gained on him again, somebody would drop this morning, she would stop and pick him up and then take off again. And this went on through the race until at the very end, you know, she had stopped for one too many sprinters. And she lost the race. There were those things that distracted her. She had certainly the ability, the capability to beat them all and to win the race. But she allowed other things to distract her from what she was really there to do. So she lost the race. And that's kind of the idea that the writer here of Hebrews is focusing on. This very, very familiar theme or concept to his writers, the readers of his day, and to us today. You know, not too many people who don't know something about the Olympic Games and, you know, sporting events and particular races and running of races. Whether you watch them or not, most of us are at least familiar with that concept, that they have them and that they're big events and big deals over. And that's what he's tying into. The games that they had back then, everybody knew about it, just like, you know, everybody knows about Rio. You know, we had the Olympics this past summer, and everybody was all over the place. That's kind of how it was back then, although they weren't televised on TV yet. They still had a little time to wait for that to happen. But everybody knew about the games, because it was a part of their lives. So the writer is taking something that is very, very familiar to the people of his day, and to us, to drive a very, very important point home. The crowd of onlookers, he uses the word therefore. Okay? And as we've talked about before, therefore is a connecting word, isn't it?
Yes.
Alright? It connects what is there before to what is there after. Okay? Now, what is before the therefore here? Do what? The chapter of faith. Chapter 11. Where the writer goes through and talks about all of these people of great faith. All right? And then now what he's going to do is talk about those people and put them into a particular position or situation where there is a real connection between them and us. In other words, the reason that he talked about their faith wasn't just to, you know, highlight and go, weren't they really great people? Right? Their faith that they had and that they exhibited has a great value, even to his readers then and to us today. Therefore, okay, he's just outlined this, what does he refer to them as? A great cloud of witnesses. All right, therefore, since we are surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses, all of these people of great faith that he's been talking about, they are, as he describes, they are the witnesses. Now, in keeping with this idea or this theme of, you know, athletic games, what's the visualization that he's really wanting us to have? Do I? A race, but a race where? And what else is there in... Do what? Yeah. But basically the visualization is of a great stadium. Okay? That is filled with spectators. Alright? Think about the stadium at Texas A&M. Okay? It's one of the largest athletic stadiums, football stadiums, that we have in this country. And not only is it one of the largest in terms of seating capacity, but it also has, and this is their thing, in fact, they copyrighted this, so nobody else can use this, the 12th man. Okay? Y'all understand what that means?
Yeah.
There are 11 men on the field at any given time in a football game, But they have 12 men. Who is the 12th man? It's the crowd.
Yeah.
It's the great crowd of witnesses that are there screaming and shouting for their team. Okay? Now, I don't remember what I've heard, some different numbers and so forth. I know Texas A&M is one of the larger stadiums. University of South Carolina, a few years ago, I understood their stadium would hold 90,000 people.
Wow.
Okay? There are some stadiums, and I don't remember which ones, but there's some now that hold even more than that.
I think Michigan.
Michigan, maybe.
100,000.
Okay? Well, you think about that large of a stadium. If you've ever seen those, you know, any of the NFL, you know, college games, you see what huge stadiums the crowds of people that are there. Some of the things that I have read about the ancient games and the stadiums they had back then would make our stadiums look small. Okay? Would make them look small. Okay? They were enormous in size. And some scholars have even said that some of those stadiums would hold a couple of 100,000 people in them. Huge, huge stadiums. And they were very common throughout the ancient world because Olympic games and athletic games were that popular. And that's not even to mention all the gladiator contests and so forth that went on in stadiums and so forth, like the Roman Colosseum and so on. But you can just imagine the idea. So when the writer has written these things, if his audience back then is reading these words, this great cloud, not a crowd, but a cloud of witnesses, and he says they're doing what? They're surrounded by these witnesses. So that is intended to give us the concept and the idea, the visualization that, you know, there's not just a couple of people sitting up there in the grandstands here. All right, we are surrounded, okay, by a great cloud of witnesses. Now, these witnesses provide three main important things for the Christian, right? The first one is that they witness to the faithfulness of God. They witness to the faithfulness of God. Through all of their lives, that is, all of these witnesses, these people of great faith, through all of their life's ups and downs, God remains steadfast and faithful to them. You go back and you think about it. Just look at the list of the folks that the writer mentions in chapter 11. Look at the ups and downs of people like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, okay? Moses.
Yeah.
Look at all of those people, and their lives were not all good, were they? Okay? There was a lot of good, there was a lot of bad. And they are witnesses to testify to the faithfulness of God, that through everything, God remained faithful to them. Secondly, they testify to the value of persistence. Okay? Value of persistence. Through the difficulties that they experienced, they persisted in faithfulness. They did not give up. Think about what Abraham knew when God called him to begin with. Abraham, yes, Lord, I got a job for you to do. Okay, where's it going to be? Don't worry about that right now. When am I leaving? Right now. Well, where am I going? Don't worry about that right now. What am I going to do when I get there? Don't worry about that right now. Okay? I mean, you know, I can just imagine that's probably something about the conversation that God had with Abraham when he called him, okay? He didn't give him a whole lot of information, did he?
No.
He just said, Abraham, I want you to pack your stuff and go. Where? To a land that I will show you. Well, you know, God, that's kind of broad, okay? Could you narrow that down a little bit? No, not right now. What did Abraham do? He obeyed God. He obeyed God. Okay? And you'll see this statement later on in our worship hour, and it was credited to him as righteousness. Okay? That through all of the different things that they went through, and I cannot imagine a more difficult test of faithfulness than the test that God put Abraham through when he called upon him to offer his son Isaac on the altar. And Abraham's response was what? Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. And he took his son, Isaac, laid him on the altar. The interesting thing about that persistence, okay, is in the part of that story when Abraham and Isaac they get to the base of the mountain and they tell the servant that's with them, you stay here with the animals, and he and I are going to go and offer a sacrifice. Remember what he says next? And we will return. Not I will return, but we will return. Okay? A persistence in faithfulness. They testify to the value of that persistence. The audience of the Hebrew writer experienced a lot of difficulties in their time, just as you and I do today. And we need that same witness to encourage us to be persistent through whatever it is we are facing. And third, they provide the encouragement inherent in any spectator sport. Okay? In other words, they are cheering us on as we live out our faith today. Okay? Think about what's going on in a stadium. The game is being played or a race is being run out on that field. What are the spectators doing besides buying Dr. Pepper and nachos? They're cheering, right?
Yeah.
And why are they cheering? I'm sorry, somebody over here said it. They want what? They want their team to win. Okay? They're not there just, you know, well, some of them, I guess, are there to make fools out of themselves. I don't know, but that's what some of them do in the stadium today. But the reason that they're there primarily is to cheer their team on because they want them to be victorious. And that is no less true of this great cloud of witnesses that you and I have today. They are watching us as we are running our race. And they want us to be victorious. They want you to be victorious as you run your race. And so they are cheering you on. They are cheering me on. They're cheering all of us on as we are running our race. This race that is full of obstacles, this race that is full of trinkets that Satan is dropping in front of us to distract us, this race that is full of all kinds of things that are intended to keep us from winning. Again?
You're talking about the people that are dying and going before us and cheering us on.
Yep. And we're going to talk about that specific thing more in just a second here, in terms of who all does that involve. Okay, so hang on to that thought with me for just a moment. Okay, but that's what they're doing. They want us to win. They want us to be victorious, and so they are cheering. And I just like this idea. They are cheering for their team. Okay? They're cheering for their team. Who's on their team? Us. Say? Us. And they're cheering for their team. I gotta run back and get a book. I had it there with my stuff and I left it on the desk. Hang with me just a second. I'm gonna share with you a story here. That the author of this book talks about. He says, I heard someone tell this story about a famous football coach. It seemed he had a player on his team who was only mediocre compared to his teammates. The player's father would come to every game, hoping that his son would be called into the game. Then one day, just before one of their biggest games, the father died. The coach did not even expect his son to dress out, but he did. He came to the coach and begged to be in the starting lineup of the game. Finally, the coach consented and told him, I'll let you, but remember, first mistake you make, you're out of the game. The game started, and this young man blocked, ran, and tackled as never before. He was able to stay in the whole game. In fact, he was one of the main reasons the team won. After the game was over, the team carried him away in victory on their shoulders. Later, the coach came to him and said, Son, I've never seen you play such an inspired game. What happened? I mean, your father just died, and yet you played so well today. What happened? The young man responded, Coach, there's something about my dad that you did not know. It's true he came to every game, but he was blind, so he never saw me play. But Coach, now he's gone to heaven, and this is the first game he's ever really seen me play. So, Ann, that goes back to your question and comment. Who is that cloud of witnesses made up of? It's not just the folks that are mentioned in the 11th chapter of Hebrews. It is all of those people of great faith who have died, who have gone on before us. You see, who have finished the race. And they are cheering us on. They are our loved ones. Say, and all of those people who have gone through those things and now are part of that great cloud of witnesses. Do we need to pass some tissues around? I'm surprised I got through reading that to you.
That's why they say, don't speak evil of the dead.
Yeah. Absolutely. The church in heaven, okay, is cheering on the church on earth.
I have a question. Why is it that when people speak about someone that has passed, they said, and God rest their soul?
Just a wish of a blessing for them.
But he's resting their soul. That's what I don't understand. Why does
heaven is a blessing?
I think it's just, you know, an expression of, you know.
It just makes them feel better. So,
make them feel better.
It's the people who are saying
that.
But you're saying something real about
them.
All
right. It's just wishing a blessing on them that God is taking care of them. I think it's mainly the sentiment of it. Right, but I think sometimes people just need to be able to express it. You know, so it's just a way to do that. Okay? All right. We got lingerers. Come on in. Okay, what about the game plan? Let's talk about the game plan here. Okay, we've got this great cloud of witnesses that are surrounding the stadium of life here that we are living in. And they're cheering us on because their desire is for us to be victorious. Okay? But let's talk about those now who are on the field. Okay, because that's where he goes next, doesn't it? You know, you got all these witnesses that are watching the game and witnessing here, but what about what's going on in the field? What about the players, which would be who? Us, okay? Do we have a game plan, or is there a game plan? You see, the text tells us about the spectators, but it also tells us about those on the field. There are three things that he talks about here in terms of this Christian strategy for winning on the field. All right, the first one is guidance for training. Okay, guidance for training. An athlete must be disciplined if he expects to win, does he not?
Right.
Okay, if you don't go through the training, then don't expect to win. All right? I remember when my son was young, as he was growing up, he loved to play baseball. Baseball was his favorite thing, it still is. And I spent hours and hours with him practicing and so forth. And when, as we would go out and practice, he would get so discouraged with himself. And the reason is because as he started trying to learn something new, he couldn't do it perfect the first time. You understand what I'm telling you here? Mm-hmm. I had to tell him over and over again, it takes practice. Okay? Nobody steps up to the plate and hits a home run every time they get up there, and they certainly don't usually do it the first time. Okay? It takes practice. And the more you practice, help me out, the better you get.
Very good. Yeah.
Okay? And with that practice, okay, is oftentimes a lot of hardship and so forth. It's blood, sweat, and tears, so to speak. All right? It is training. It is discipline that allows athletes to excel. We've got to train hard if we want to win the prize. Notice what the writer here says. Throw off everything that hinders, okay, and the sin that easily entangles. Now, you know, if you think about runners, and I ran cross country when I was in high school, and one of the things that we had, that we used back then, it was really amazing how they worked, were ankle weights. Any of you familiar with ankle weights? Okay? You have these lead weights in a rack, that you wrap them around your ankles, and you walk around with them before you get ready to start the race. And just before the race, you take them off, and your feet just feel like you're walking on air. They're so light. Well, you know, that helps you to run faster and longer. Never tried to run with those ankle weights on. Okay? And I think that's kind of the idea here that the writer wants to do is you've got to take those things off. Those things that will hinder you, okay? The things that will easily entangle you. You've got to get rid of everything that gets between you and victory. Right? Throw it off, he says. Okay? The next thing he says is run with perseverance the course marked out for us. Okay? Now, there's two main things here that we've got to keep in mind about this. First of all, we've got to run how? with perseverance. Okay? In other words, a determination that we are not going to stop. We're not going to give up. No matter how hard it gets, we are not going to stop. I read an article just the other day, this past weekend, there was a man, I don't remember how old he was, but he was an older fella that ran, I think it was a whole marathon, but somebody, if you know the article, you can correct me on it, I don't remember all the details, but he actually ran this thing carrying an oxygen bottle with him, because he was on oxygen, but he was determined. Now, he didn't win the race, okay, that's not the point. The point is, he finished. Okay? You got to keep in mind, in this race that we're in, we are not competing against one another. Okay? All right? There are not only 144,000 seats in heaven. Okay? As some, you know, religious groups teach today. That's all there is. And you got to, you know, you got to fight for getting one of those seats, otherwise you're going to be stuck here. It doesn't work that way. We're not competing with one another. There's plenty of room for everybody. Okay? So we're not competing against one another. What we're doing is, and I think the whole approach to a marathon, you know, for most of the runners that run in a marathon, what is their goal? It's to finish. It's not to win the race, okay? Because you got to be really good. You know, some of these folks that are, they're running in marathons all the time, and they're, you know, they're the ones that are, they're concentrating on winning. But that's only, you know, well, usually it's two people, one guy and one girl, right? That's the two categories they have. But most people that are running those marathons are running simply to finish the marathon. And that's the attitude that we need to have. I'm not running to win against you, to beat you, to get a better time than you, or anything like that. I'm running to finish the race. No matter how hard it takes, no matter how many hills I've got to run up, you know, and endure to get up there, no matter how many are going to go, I'm going to go flying down, you know, whee, all the way, you know. No, it doesn't matter. I'm going to keep on running. You see? No matter how many hurdles might be put in my way, I'm going to persevere.
Right? I like in John chapter 14. When Jesus said, "Let not your heart be troubled, believe in God, be brought forth in my Father's house are many mansions."
Many.
And that they were, if it were not so, I would have told you. And I'm going
right
to prepare a place for you. I'm going to come back again. I will receive you into my chapter. That's where I am, maybe also.
Maybe also.
And we have that assurance from God, from Jesus himself, that this is the promise that we have to look forward to. You gave a sermon not long ago, and you had the illustration of all the people that are sitting there and waiting, you know, and wondering when you know, Jesus is going to come back. But they're like they're waiting in a holding room.
Yeah.
But I thought that was so interesting, the way you had it, you know.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting. But we have so much assurance from God, the Son, that the promise, and He is the one who keeps His promise. Right. And that's what I have to look for. And soon my time is going to end, and my race will be finished. We're not going to stay here.
That's right.
This world is not my home. You know, so I have better things to look forward to.
Absolutely.
As we all do.
Absolutely. So we just need to keep persevering.
Yeah. Okay,
now, the second thing about this is that it is the course, how does he describe it? The course set before us, or the course marked out for us, okay? In other words, there is a specific course that we are to run that has been marked out for us by God, okay? We don't get to set the course, all right? It is not our course to set. It is our course to run. God has already set that course, okay? And that's why he says, a course marked out for us. Okay? Lynette, you and Tom do the dog trials with your dogs all the time. You go to the dog trial, and who sets the dog course up? The judge does. Do you have any say in being able to say, hey, I don't like that obstacle, I want to go over here instead? The dog does that. Right? But the dog, when the dog doesn't follow the course, what happens?
Oh, you're
eliminated. Yeah, you see? Now, dogs do that, okay? So we ought to be intelligent enough to know that the same thing applies to us. We don't set the course, we run the course, and if we don't follow the course, what's going to happen?
Well,
we're going to get eliminated.
Yeah.
Okay? Because it is God's course that He has marked out. And so we must persevere no matter how difficult the course becomes. All right?
Yeah.
We need to persevere. Look at, let me get somebody to turn over to 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7. And let me get somebody else to go over to Philippians 3, 12 through 15. Who's got 2 Timothy 4?
No one engaged in warfare entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier.
Are you in 2 Timothy 4?
Oh, I'm sorry, 2 Timothy 4.
Verse 7.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Is that right?
Yes, that's it.
Sorry.
Verse 8, he goes on to say what? Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have longed for this appearing. Who's got Philippians 3, 12 through 15? Somebody got that?
No.
All right. So you get the point here. I haven't obtained it yet. Okay, but what am I doing?
Working on it.
I'm pressing on towards the goal.
That's right.
Okay? And it's the goal to which, what does he say? That Christ Jesus has called me heavenward. Or that God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. Right? So it is God's course that you and I need to run. The third thing is we need to keep our eyes on the prize.
Amen.
All right? He tells us here in running this race and keeping the course that we are to, he says what? Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and
finisher.
Some of your translations say perfecter of our faith. The word is the same. It means to finish, complete. Okay? Amen. The author and finisher of our faith. Again, it's the idea that, you know, we don't want to allow the trinkets and all the little, you know, shiny gems that Satan is going to drop in front of us to distract us and to keep us from being victorious and finishing the race. All right? The other thing about that is we keep our eyes on Jesus. You know, the idea here is that we need to look to Him as our helper. Okay? Look to Him as the source of strength, Him and through His Spirit, to give you what you need as you are persevering in your race. Okay? Now, let me close up. We're running out of time. One more thing I want to read to you. This one isn't the tearjerker, okay? So set your tissue down. But I want to finish up with this particular story that the author shares, all right? He says, recently I heard William Johnson tell a story of a film he had seen of a race between Dr. Roger Bannister, a British physician who had broken the four-minute mile, and John Landy from Australia. In the spring of 1954, Dr. Bannister had set a record in the mile run, and news traveled around the world that the four-minute barrier, once believed impossible to break, had been breached. But no sooner had a four-minute mile been accomplished in England than Australia boasted the same feat by their own John Landy. People began to say, wouldn't it be great if someday Landy and Bannister could race each other? So a sports event was arranged in Canada for August of that same year. Truly, it was the race of the year. From the first, the spectators, okay, that great cloud of witnesses, the spectators were on their feet cheering the athletes on. Landy's strategy was clear. Start in front, stay in front. At the end of the first quarter, the runners were well under a minute. End of the second quarter, well under 2 minutes. End of third quarter, well under 3 minutes. In the fourth quarter, Landy was in the lead with Bannister well behind. In describing the moment, Johnson went on. You can see what happened right there on the film. Suddenly, the loud noise of the crowd became an enormous roar. Landy knew that must mean that Bannister was gaining on him. And then, just before the finish, Landy turned his head for a split second to look back for Bannister. And Bannister, seizing the psychological advantage, dashed ahead of Landy and won the race. All because Landy took his eyes off of the goal. Okay? We are running our race. We need to run with perseverance the race marked out for us and keep our eyes on Jesus. All right? Thank you all very much.
Thank you, brother.